Hello, and welcome to That's Not Normal, a podcast about all those things that make you go, wait, what? I'm your host, Kate, and today covers two different terrifying murders by medicine. We'll start with the 1982 Chicago Tylenol murders, and then get into the 1986 Excedrin poisonings. I hope that by the end of this episode, you are checking your tamper-proof seals like your life depends on it. Because it just might. But before we get into it, first, it's time for some totally normal news. And then, of course, not normal news. So, totally normal news. We did a thing this weekend, and sitting next to me is my new co-host, a 50-pound bucket of mutt love named Marcus. He took a long trip from a shelter in Oklahoma, where he probably spent his entire life, until he got up here to Milwaukee. He just turned one, and he is just the sweetest boy. I don't think he'll talk much on the podcast, and he napped through most of this research, but he's really cute. And now I guess it's time for not normal news. This first headline just grabbed me. It reads, NASA, give us back our moon dust and cockroaches. So apparently, during the 1969 Apollo 11 mission, that was the flight to the moon with Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, and Buzz Aldrin. So anyways, the men brought back 47 pounds of lunar rock. Some of this moon rock and some cockroaches made it to Marion Brooks, who was an entomologist at the University of Minnesota. Her job was to feed some of the lunar dust to the cockroaches to see if there were any toxins present in the dust. She didn't find any evidence that there was anything dangerous or poisonous in the dust, and she also didn't return the vial of dust or the cockroaches to NASA. Instead, she kept them in her home. Marion Brooks sadly passed away in 2007, and in 2010, her daughter sold the cockroaches and the moon dust. They are now in the hands of RR Auction, who I would imagine intended on auctioning the items off before NASA demanded them back. NASA claims that the cockroaches and dust are still the property of the federal government, so the auction company is just kind of holding on to them until NASA and the person who wanted to list the items can work something out. The cockroaches are dead, by the way. And if you're interested in knowing, because now I have this information in my head, cockroaches have a lifespan of up to 30 weeks, so those babies have been dead for quite a while, but not because of the moon dust. The next story takes us to the Chipper Truck Cafe in Yonkers, New York. The 24-hour Irish and American restaurant received an order on Grubhub at 6 o'clock in the morning on June 19th, but they found an unusual message in the additional requests area. It read, "Please call the police. He's going to call me when you delivered. Come with the cones. Please don't make it obvious." I think what it meant to say was, "Please call the police. He's going to kill me. When you deliver, come with the cops. Please don't make it obvious." Which is a little bit different than the normal requests that they receive, like, "Please leave the order on the porch." The restaurant employees weren't sure if it was a prank or real, but they decided to err on the side of caution, good for them, and contacted the police. About an hour later, the police knocked on the door of 32-year-old Kimoy Royal. He thought it was a Grubhub driver. The woman who had placed the order is a 24-year-old woman who had met Royal on a dating app, and after months of talking, they had finally just met in person. This meetup, which I would assume started the night before, became violent, and Royal assaulted the woman and took her phone, but eventually gave it back when she had asked to order food. The police arrested Royal, and he's being charged with committing predatory sexual assault, rape, criminal sexual acts, and sexual abuse. So hopefully this asshole will be going bye-bye for a very long time. The owners of the chipper truck were given a $5,000 reward from Grubhub for their quick thinking, which led to the rescue of this young woman. And with that, it's on to our main event. The Chicago Tylenol murders and the Washington Excedrin poisonings. It's 1982 in the Chicago metropolitan area, and 12-year-old Mary Kellerman woke up in the middle of the night with a sore throat and a runny nose. Her parents did what most parents would do, gave her some Tylenol. Mary went back to sleep, but the next morning her parents were thrust into their worst nightmare. Their child was dead. Mary's death was at first thought to have been caused by a stroke, but after the toxicology test came back, it was found that the one extra-strength Tylenol capsule she had taken contained a lethal dose of cyanide. Later that day, 27-year-old Adam Janis of Arlington Heights called into work because he just felt like he was coming down with a cold. After picking his two young sons up from preschool, he stopped at a Jewel grocery store and purchased some Tylenol to help with his cold symptoms. When he got home, he took the medicine and immediately collapsed in his bedroom, slipping into a coma. He died in the emergency room. Following Adam's death, his family got together at his house to grieve and to make funeral arrangements. Adam's 25-year-old brother, Stanley, and his 19-year-old wife, Teresa, started to get headaches, so they went to the medicine cabinet and grabbed the bottle of Tylenol. Moments after taking the medicine, Stanley and Teresa both collapsed. Stanley passed away that day, and Teresa died 2 days later in the hospital. It was suspected that perhaps there was a carbon monoxide leak in the house, and that had caused the three deaths in this family. So the entire rest of the family was rushed to the hospital, but they were all completely fine. Well, fine from a medical standpoint, but certainly not emotionally fine. They just lost three loved ones. Mary Reiner, a 35-year-old mother of four, had recently given birth to their youngest child, and she was experiencing some postpartum pain. So she took some Tylenol. Shortly after, her 8-year-old daughter watched her mom collapse onto the floor. Ugh. Mary's husband quickly came home from work and called an ambulance. However, Mary died in the hospital. The next victim was 30-year-old Mary McFarland, who felt a headache coming on while she was at work. She went into the back room, took a Tylenol, and immediately collapsed on the floor and was found dead. The final victim was 35-year-old flight attendant Paula Prince. Paula had spent her day working on a flight from Vegas to O'Hare. When she landed in Chicago, she felt a cold coming on, so she stopped at a local Walgreens and purchased some Tylenol. For a few days, no one heard from Paula, and she was eventually found dead in her apartment with an open Tylenol bottle nearby. At first, these seven deaths were blamed on natural causes or carbon monoxide poisoning. But when it was learned that all the victims had taken Tylenol shortly before their deaths, investigators took a look at those bottles. It was noticed pretty much immediately that the bottles smelled like almonds. Cyanide. Yes, cyanide can smell like bitter almonds, although not everyone carries the gene allowing them to smell it. Once it was announced that the deaths were the cause of Tylenol being poisoned with cyanide, the Chicago community became absolutely panicked. Tylenol is such a household medicine cabinet staple. How many other bottles were poisoned? Was Tylenol the only thing that had been laced with cyanide? Something like this had never happened before. It had been discovered that all of the bottles came from different manufacturing facilities, meaning that they had to have been tampered with after they had made it to the various different stores. Because remember, this isn't one store that has these. It's various places around the Chicago area. Johnson & Johnson, the parent company who makes Tylenol, actually acted super fast. They withdrew all Tylenol capsules from stores in Chicago and the surrounding area. When two more poison bottles were found, Johnson & Johnson ordered a national withdrawal of every capsule. 31 million bottles of Tylenol were recalled. Johnson & Johnson opened up a phone line for those who had purchased Tylenol and had questions, and another phone line for the media to contact them through. Johnson & Johnson offered a $100,000 reward for any information leading to an arrest, while themselves suffering from $100 million in losses. I just can't wrap my head around what kind of sick fuck poisons Tylenol bottles, having absolutely no idea who is going to ingest them. I just picture some, like, sweaty, disgusting person eating Banquet brand Salisbury steak TV dinners or chicken straight out of the bucket in their filthy house, watching the news to see who they got. It's disgusting. To this day, the Tylenol murders remain unsolved. But there was one suspect for a hot minute. Johnson & Johnson received a letter from a person claiming to be the one responsible. In the letter, the individual demanded $1 million to stop the poisonings. Obviously, Johnson & Johnson gave this letter to the police and FBI, who tested it for fingerprints. And there they were, the fingerprints of James William Lewis. Thing is, he didn't do it. Lewis lived in New York and had never even been to Chicago. This colossal moron, though having nothing to do with the deaths, did get himself charged with extortion and was sentenced to 20 years in prison. He was released in 1995 after serving 12 years. Since James William Lewis didn't do it, and there was basically no evidence to go off of, police had to think outside the box a bit. Investigators had the newspaper write about the death of the youngest victim, Mary Kellerman. The article contained the location of her burial in hopes that the person responsible would go to the site for, like, a sick thrill. Cameras ran 24/7, but weeks went by and no one visited. The Chicago Tylenol murders are so heartbreaking and senseless, and it's especially sad that they still haven't found the person who's responsible. In 1989, the year I was born, the FDA created manufacturer guidelines to make consumer products tamper-proof. Tylenol and many other over-the-counter pharmaceutical companies also moved from capsules to caplets to make it more difficult to mess with medicine. But seriously, check those seals, people. While the Chicago Tylenol murders were being broadcast all over the media, someone was at home watching from across the country in Washington. And this is a garbage person by the name of Stella Nickel. Stella grew up poor in the Pacific Northwest and at 16 gave birth to a daughter, Cynthia. She later had a failed marriage and gave birth to another daughter, but I couldn't find much about her. Stella wasn't exactly an angel and had a past of fraud, forgery, and beating her daughter with a curtain rod. When Stella was in her early 30s, she married a man by the name of Bruce Nickel. On June 5th, 1986, Stella's husband Bruce came home from work with a headache. He took 4 capsules of Excedrin, which I feel like that's a lot, but like not enough to kill you. Bruce almost immediately collapsed. His cause of death was decided as natural causes as a result of emphysema. Less than a week later, 40-year-old mother and bank manager Susan Snow took 2 Excedrin in the morning. Some sources say she had a headache. Some sources said that this was her routine, and she took 2 Excedrin every morning because she liked the caffeine. Susan collapsed on the floor of her bathroom, where her 15-year-old daughter found her unresponsive and with only a faint pulse. Paramedics transferred Susan to the hospital, but she died there, never having regained consciousness. The craziest part about what happened to Susan is that her husband had also taken Excedrin that morning from the same bottle, but he just happened to grab ones that hadn't been poisoned. Medical examiners noticed the scent of bitter almonds, which led them in the direction of cyanide poisoning. And sure as shit, that's what it was. People thought this could be the Chicago Tylenol murders all over again. When Stella saw the news of Susan Snow's death, she had investigators look back into the death of her husband, Bruce, saying that he had also taken Excedrin the day that he died. And what do you know? Turns out he was poisoned with cyanide too. But if you're not catching any of my vibes about Stella, she already knew this. Stella was getting annoyed with Bruce. He had recently quit drinking, and Stella just wasn't quite ready to give up the party lifestyle, and she now thought that Bruce was boring. She talked pretty openly with her daughter Cynthia about wanting to kill Bruce, and even told her that she had tried to poison him with foxglove, but it just wasn't working. Stella had recently taken out a $76,000 life insurance policy on Bruce, but she would receive an additional $100,000 if he died by accident. You know, like taking poisoned medicine. Stella was a moron, like James William Lewis, the guy who tried to extort Johnson & Johnson. So she had previously trotted her butt down to the local library and checked out books about poison. And on the pages about cyanide, there were her fingerprints just all up on there. In the poison capsules, investigators also noticed some unknown green specks, which were later identified as algae destroyer. Stella and Bruce had a big fish tank. Investigators went to local fish stores where one employee remembered Stella having bought the algae destroyer. Turns out, she had crushed up the cyanide in the same container that she had been using to crush up algae destroyer. In order to murder her own husband, Stella had poisoned her husband's bottle of Excedrin while also poisoning 5 other bottles at local stores, so she would be able to cash in on that extra $100,000 of life insurance money. Her own daughter, Cynthia, testified against her and told of the many times her mother had mentioned killing Bruce. Stella was ultimately charged with 5 counts of product tampering, 2 of which caused death. The jury deliberated for 5 days, and Stella was sentenced to 2 90-year sentences for the murders and 3 10-year sentences for product tampering, a total of 210 years behind bars. Stella is currently 78 and has served 34 years in prison. She has, as of recently, been petitioning for her release on the basis of her failing health. I couldn't find any information on whether or not they are going to acknowledge this petition and possibly set a parole hearing date, but personally, I'm totally fine with her just staying right where she's at. She killed 2 people, one of which she did not even know, and she could have taken the lives of many more. Screw you, Stella. And that is all for this episode of That's Not Normal. Please be sure to rate and review on whatever podcast app you are listening on. Check out the Facebook and Instagram at That's Not Normal, a podcast. And of course, thanks for listening.